Hi everyone, Sue Hall here. Welcome to the eighth podcast in our fourth series of Talking the Dis Out of Dyslexia, hosted by the whole Dyslexic Society. On March 27th, 2021, TEDx Bear Creek Park live streamed 12 talks, and I was privileged to be one of the speakers. Today, I could not be more excited to introduce Tanya Amon, who was our head coach. So welcome, Tanya.
Hi, Sue. Thanks for having me.
Honestly, this is a treat for me. It really is, because I've noticed on one of your testimonials on your website, it says that you take great to excellent. And I take it further than that, if I could find the right word. But you looked after us all so well, and we're all so grateful. It was a real pleasure.
It's a wonderful experience to watch the speakers start at the beginning, and then where they end up on the platform on the day, it's quite a journey. I feel privileged to be able to be a part of that.
I don't think many of us realize how much of a journey.
That's the most common comment, is I had no idea how much work this was going to be. I had no idea where I was going to end up from where I started.
And it's been totally worth it, because so many of us have had comments about what a professional talk it was, and all that hard work really paid off.
Yes, it does.
Now, I saw a t-shirt recently that said, "Dear teacher, I talk to everyone, so moving my seat won't help." And I wondered if that was you at school. Did you enjoy communicating at school?
Oh, school was very difficult for me. It was very difficult. I had great trouble in reading, in math, in all of that. So that doesn't make you a really outgoing person a lot of the time. Where I made up for it is my ability to stand up in front of the class and give a presentation. And that's how I got my marks to come up a little bit. But no, school was very difficult for me.
It would be so nice if we could have more oral presentations as part of our school grading.
I think it's really important, actually. I think that it should definitely increase, and it gives the students more rounding out skills on what they're going to need by the time they finish.
So how did you get from that person in school who liked the presentation part to become the speaker's coach, an international award-winning communication expert and presentation designer?
Wow. There's a lot of room between those two points, isn't there?
Totally.
Well, I'll tell you, I finished school and still couldn't read well. And my mom's, her solution was, I think it was probably about grade 11 where things got really tough, is she took me to a speed reading course at UBC. And that actually helped, because I could skip all those little words that were making everything confusing and be able to grab a concept. And there was a lot of struggle there, but I went and I did a few things. So I was top line real estate. I've got my securities license. Went to university, actually, at 37 years old.
Wow.
Yeah, those things. But I actually didn't read a whole book beginning to end until I was 21.
What did you study at university, Tanya?
Neuropsychology.
Ooh.
That was my field of interest. Trying to figure out how my brain worked and how come it didn't seem to work like everyone else's, but you don't know that. You can't see inside other people's heads. But I just knew things were, they were different. The cogs in my wheels lined up differently, put it that way, in my thought process.
Mm-hmm. And did the neuropsychology course help with that?
Not with me, but definitely with my children. I started to learn how they started to think. Oh. And I was able to step in and be a little bit more of a help to them on their journey than I had. So I was grateful for that.
Yeah, absolutely. So then did you set up your coaching business straight away, or did you join Toastmasters, or how did that go?
Well, first time I spoke in front of a public, I was 5, an audience of 1,000, and I had this moment of clarity, if you would, being the youngest in a very loud, large family with a lot of people around. You didn't get listened to very often. And I can remember that feeling of having all of those eyes on me, but they were all quiet. Everybody was quiet, waiting for me to say something. And I remember not wanting to leave, thinking, this is power.
I'm here.
Yeah, and everyone wants to listen to me. Instead of having to scream and jump to get heard, you know, from big people in my life.
Hilarious.
Yeah, and I was really at peace with that. I was very comfortable with that. Mm-hmm. And so as my life went on, I started Toastmasters, oh gosh, years ago, but I only got like 3 months in and life changed and I ended up moving and leaving, but it left a mark on me. Mm-hmm. And I thought, okay. So after I raised my kids and finished my careers there, I thought, what am I going to do next? So when my youngest was in grade 11, I started back at Toastmasters, honing my skills there. And then I started competing.
Oh, yes. And then you started winning. Did you not go to an international Toastmaster? Is that right?
Yes, I did, actually. I competed. You have to win a number of levels to get there. So I think it was in my fourth year, maybe third year, I had been winning. I went into the Golden Gavel competition and I won in there. And then I went into the Toastmasters and I won up to the districts in my first go.
Wow.
And the next year, I planned this for 3 years. I thought, okay, I made it to districts the first time, but I didn't place. So that's fine. The next year, I was going to make it to districts and I was going to place. And the third year, I was going to win and go on. Well, in my second year, I won. And I remember them calling my name and I'm thinking, oh no, what have I done? This is not my plan.
No, too soon.
That's right. And so then my sister was there and she's hitting me. She's saying, go, get up there. And honestly, the first thing that went through my head is, oh my goodness, what have I done? Mm-hmm. And then it was a very odd journey from there to Washington, D.C., to compete in the international competition. After I had won, there was the president of Toastmasters International actually was there from Ireland. And my coach at the time had set up a meeting for me to talk to him that he could give me some tips about going to the internationals. I had barely been holding the trophy, I'd staring at it. And he proceeded to tell me that the speech that I just won with was unmemorable, that it wouldn't make it on the international stage, and that if I wanted to learn how to compete on an international stage, then he would spend some time talking to me. Now, this never happens. This doesn't happen. You take this speech and you take it and you win all the way along and you take that one because it's been practiced. And so I said, okay, well, now we're really getting somewhere. And I started on the journey to write a new speech for this, which doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. For months, I'd get up in the morning and I'd start writing at the end of the day, I would throw it away.
Oh.
It got to a point where my husband started to look at me and I got this look in my eye around 6 p.m. I'd been working since 4 in the morning and I'd be just like going for the delete and he'd be like, no, I'm sure there's something good there. I didn't find it. But I had such great faith. I thought, I've not been brought to this point. Mm-hmm. Get up in front of the whole world and make a fool of myself. I don't believe that. I just haven't found the core message yet.
Right.
And I went on a journey like no other. And as it turns out, which almost nobody knows, is that the speech finally came to me and came together on a Monday. I did it in front of my mom twice by Friday. I was on a plane on Monday. And I flew to DC and that speech had never been done in public. It had never been practiced.
You didn't have a chance to talk to the guy who was telling you the other one was unmemorable.
No, he was there. He ended up being there. And I got up there and then landed in the top 20 in the world with a speech that had never been done. But I'll tell you, it was a soul cracking journey. And because of that, I have become somewhat of an expert at core message.
No kidding. Oh, gosh.
I did.
Oh, now, see, if we'd known that before, we would have known you've been through way worse than we've been through.
Well, I never ask my clients or speakers to do anything that I haven't. Oh. I never do that. But I've done some pretty hardcore stuff. So I push for that because that's where the truth is. And I have one commitment when I got into this profession and this job, and that was I refuse to perpetuate more talking heads in the world making noise. I won't do it. So mm-hmm. if you work with me and if you want to get on a stage, there's something that the world needs to hear and it's important. And that usually goes down definitely a few layers, right down to a person's core.
Yeah.
And that's where I ask them to have the courage to get to before yeah. they stand on that platform or whatever it is that they're doing, whatever platform.
You definitely do that. And that's where all that authenticity comes from, because we really know you mean what you're saying, which is very, very important. Really?
Yes, I do. And often I think the comments when I read them, even on my website or whatever, you know, she's tough, but she's truthful and she makes you dig hard and that. And I'm thinking, oh, okay.
Oh, that's because somebody made me dig hard.
I think you and I had that moment as well.
Oh, well, that's definitely on my list here, because I think we'd got to the stage where the script was done and the presentation was going on, wasn't it? And you wanted me to loosen up a little bit. And I remember me saying to you, I'm sorry, I'm British, I don't do that. And I remember you saying, what are you afraid of? And I think I said, I just don't want to make a fool of myself. And I'll never forget, you said, I absolutely promise you that I will never let you make a fool of yourself. And once you said that, then we're good. It was the trust that I needed, because you're who you are and because you are so authentic. I knew you meant that. You weren't just trying to get me to make a fool of myself and you wouldn't say anything.
No, I would never do that. I would never do that to anyone. And that's the part that's the trust. And when somebody's doing something that looks unauthentic or it looks yeah. funny, I'm the first to say, why are you doing that?
Exactly.
It doesn't work. This is how it comes off, because I'm here to help people be the best that they can be.
You definitely are. And you were basically the quality control for all of us, weren't you? Because, I mean, we all had our one-on-one coaches, and then we had our humor coach and our presentation and our theme and our beginnings and our ends. So we had so many wonderful people helping us, but basically you were the quality control at the end.
Well, the program is of my design, and it's called the Collective Coaching Approach. And I have designed this program to give the speakers a richer experience, because what I've asked each coach to do is to dive deep into one topic and become an expert at it. And that's why each one of them were in their categories. And to be able to give the speakers not just one person's opinion, but six minds working as one. And it's difficult to get that cohesion. I'm still honing it. I'm still working it, dialing it in. But yes, at the end of the day, it all falls on my lap. Yes.
No, it was an amazing organization. I absolutely know that we had that same thought. We all thought, what on earth have we got ourselves into? And we'd had no idea it was going to be so much work, but it was 100% worth it. Thank you.
Good. I'm glad you think that. Most of you.
Yes. Well, exactly. Beautiful. So you got to be the top 20 in the world. And what do you do after that? Do you need to be the number one? Or is that enough? That was plenty.
Actually, what happened after that was a really humbling experience. And that is actually how I also approach any platform. I approach it with reverence and humility, because in my opinion, your audience is giving you the greatest gift that there is on earth, and that's their time and that's their attention. And I take that to heart and I take that seriously, and I give that a lot of respect. And I always thought, right from that age of 5, and I even would tell my mom, in my 50s, I will talk for a living, and I don't know what I'm going to talk about, but I will speak for a living. And it was just something I knew my whole life. Yet when I got off that stage, there were people 3 deep in tears I had touched and moved them so greatly with my speech, and them reaching out to me saying, can you help me? Can you help me find my message? And what became very clear is that I was not the one meant to be on the stage with my voice passing my one message, but rather my purpose was to help the many people get onto a platform to speak to the world about many multiple ideas that will change many lives. Mm-hmm. And it was a humbling experience because you think, oh, you're on that stage and you just have that power like I had when I was five. You want that. You start to crave that. And then to find out that that is not my true calling. My true calling is behind the scenes, not in the limelight. Yeah. And I embrace that.
To me, that's one of those defining moments or aha moments that we have throughout our lives. And they can be the tiniest little word, but it's something that really sticks and defines you.
Well, it started to, I came off of that and then I tasked myself at the impromptu speaking competition. And then I took the top award in that shortly after the international.
Wow.
And that was taxing. It was difficult to practice since you don't know what the topic is.
Exactly.
But it was a really neat practice. I put myself through a really incredible regime of practice to be able to do that type of speaking. So I challenged myself with that as well and came out on the top of that one.
Amazing. Tanya, I'm curious, what was the topic of your speech when you were five and what was the topic of your speech when you got to the international?
Well, the topic of my talk when I was five, my family had taken a trip across Canada down to New York and back by car. Needless to say, my parents ended up getting divorced. Because why would you do that? I don't know. We were gone for a long time. My family was speaking about the trip. So my talk was about my experience on the road there. And then my talk that I ended up doing, that's another funny story, because my husband was watching me going through the painstaking, trying to find what it is I was to tell the world. If you have your one moment, he said, Tanya, if you only had one chance to speak to the world, why would you not talk about the most important thing in the world? And that's love. And I remember turning around saying to him, I will talk about anything, but I'm not talking about love. I'm not doing it. I'm not going to get up there and have my moment and talk about love. Okay. He just kept shaking his head. And I literally stripped myself to the bone, spiritually, emotionally, physically, where there was no fight left inside of me. And I had to drop my daughter off at the airport. And then I drove to my mom's and I got to her place at 5 a.m. and there was nothing left to me. I was leaving for Washington, D.C. in less than a week and I had no talk. And I lied there and there was no fight. And she just started asking me a few questions about when I stopped loving and why.
Oh, Tanya. Whole thing
came flying out on the paper. That was on the Monday. I went back and she actually made an appointment for me with someone to get my chakras aligned. It's something I don't do. She tried everything. We're like, we're no holds barred. Something's got to break. And so I had that treatment for afterwards. Yeah. And it just all came out on the page. And that was it. I went back on the Friday to get my wardrobe so she could approve my wardrobe. And she said, you've got to do it from beginning to end once, Tanya. Yeah. I did it once.
Yeah. But you had to memorize it.
Yeah, I'm memorizing. It was inside of me. And it came out word for word from what I wrote. That happened. And I had no fear. I was dying to get up on that stage to get this out of me. Yeah.
Gosh, did you record it? Did anybody record it?
It's recorded in Toastmasters International Archives.
Wow. That's just amazing. Congratulations. You must have needed about 3 weeks holiday after that.
No, I came home and the phone calls started coming and it became clear to me that my humbling awakening. And it was not long after that that my husband designed my website. And from that moment, I'll be honest with you, I've never once looked for work.
Brilliant. Well, congratulations. Wow, that's so cool. I don't know what to say after that. That's quite the experience. So what do you see when you're helping people, not just TEDx people, but people in general, when you're helping them get their voice out? What do you see as the greatest challenge? Is there a general sort of greatest challenge? And what do you get the most fun out of?
Oh, boy.
We've got a while. You're okay.
Everyone is so different.
I know.
Everyone has got their own perspective and uniqueness. But one of the hardest things for me to help people do, to allow who they are authentically to come alive. Mm-hmm. Over their years with people shaming, name calling, how they were raised, just layers and layers and layers over top of somebody's true authentic self, and it gets buried. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to pull that out, and not only pull it out, but then to give the speakers what they need to know that that's okay. Mm-hmm. And that's what people really want to see. They really want to listen to somebody who's being very real about everything. And, you know, if you've lived life, you're a victim. Life causes trauma. But whether you are living a victim role is very different, you know? So people have all sorts of stories. And when they get to me, usually somebody has gone through something tragic. They've gotten to the other side. And now they want to teach. Mm-hmm. What I find out 100% of the time is they haven't quite finished that journey yet. And we journey the last part together so far. Yeah. And even when I'm working with corporate, you still need to be authentic. Doesn't matter whether you're talking to a bunch of realtors or brokers, doesn't matter, or a boardroom. The authenticity of the person is what people are attracted to. And so I would say the hardest thing to do is to help people be their authentic self.
I understand that. Now you've got me thinking, have I not finished my journey? The most fun is presumably when you get the most satisfaction out of them getting to where they need to be.
Yeah. Watching them crack open that piece of themselves that they sit back and say, you know what? Yeah, you know what? I'm not so bad. I guess that's okay, right? And they start to laugh more. They smile more. They sit up straighter. They have longer moments of eye contact because they feel more secure. And watching them enjoy being in their own skin really is a beautiful gift. That's the gift of the hard work that I do.
Now, you also have some very creative gifts, which may be part of the way your thinking process is, because I know you love to cook, isn't that correct? And you're quite a creative cook, I think.
Yes, I am. I did 15 years in restaurant business. I work for Kenki Restaurants Limited. So I work for the cannery, Joe Forte's, and I was there and opened up the fish house in Stanley Park at that time. Funny thing about it is that I became the youngest manager in their company and the only woman at the age of 23.
Whoa.
That's because I could talk. The problem was that in the management meetings, you take turns taking the notes. Okay, well, I managed to go a whole year getting out of it because I was afraid to hand what I was going to write to the secretary for her to type up the notes and put it up. And I got caught and had to do the notes. And she happened to be a grade 12 student girl hostess that did this stuff. And she looked at that and she looked at me and she says, "You can't spell." And I'm like, "I know." And she goes, "How do you read?" I said, "Not well." And she said, "Okay." And then from that day on, every day, she gave me a spelling test of the words that I couldn't spell. Right. And she helped me. And that's when I ended up reading my very first book, too. Wow. And so she helped me along with that. And then I took that with me, the teachings from her. I guess she just had that. I actually got it. And then from there went into real estate and did that. And then I got my securities ticket. So I worked in a brokerage house in downtown in Vancouver.
Wow.
And all along, I had the feeling I wanted to cook. I was a terrible cook when I started. My husband, who had known me since I was 15, said I could burn water. It was just terrible. I was like that movie, Julia and Julia.
Yeah.
And then I picked a lot up in the restaurant business. And I just started. And then when I ended up with the kids, which are not mine, because I wasn't going to have kids, that's a whole nother story. I ended up raising all three of his. I started to be a stay-at-home mom because of their learning disabilities. And then I started to cook. I made all their food from scratch, granola bars, protein bars. I just did everything from scratch and catering company. It's called Something Good. And then I later got into sauces. Now, this is where the speaking comes in, is when I'm stuck on a topic, a subject, I can't get to that core, I start a sauce because usually sauces, the best ones are made with very simple ingredients, but they take time. You have to spend the time standing there, stirring, while each ingredient reduces down to its richest form. And it slows me. And it makes me see the things I'm missing.
Wow.
You know, the bigger the problem, the more sauces coming out of the kitchen. Put it that way.
That's absolutely brilliant. Did you say that you had a catering company?
Yeah.
Do you do that now?
No, I don't do that now. I did do this one where it's called Serving for Two. And so I've got five signature sauces that I do, but I get them up in a Ziploc pack. All you need is a 6-minute hot water bath for two people. So you can turn any meal to something gourmet.
And then I
have a signature barbecue sauce, a black cherry bourbon barbecue sauce that I've now made vegan. I've got some clients who want me to do that and get it into the vegan restaurants. I'm a little busy right now. You know, I do get to it. I do.
You just need some more clients that you have to be patient with. Get some more sauces.
I know. And out come the sauces and the freezer gets stocked and everybody places their orders. But that's all I really do now. Savory jams and sauces.
Sounds so good. You're amazing. Do you ever rest?
Sometimes.
So what's the future looking like? Keeping doing what you're doing, presumably. Do you have a major plan? And also, if you had to give a talk now, is there one subject that you would really love to pursue?
I've really thought about doing a talk on dyslexia.
I didn't know they were going to say that, just to the listeners.
I know you didn't, because I never told you. It's something I've just kept to myself in a way, but just the struggles and being misunderstood and everything that you talk about. I never saw myself as being anything, doing anything, capable of any of that in school, being teased, the one that stands out that never does well and things like that, and how difficult that is. And even today, you know, I'm a speaker's coach, and sometimes when my brain goes fast, too fast, I can get a stutter. And so when I'm excited, I'm telling my husband and I'm stuttering, he says, really, you know, you speak for a living?
You need to see someone.
I know. And my words can get mixed up and things like that. And I do a lot of editing as well. So I've often thought about doing something and what that's like.
That would be incredible. Because the message that you heard from me, obviously, I believe wholeheartedly that that information needs to get out to everybody. And being able to be on the TEDx is a wonderful platform because it does reach a lot of people. But at the same time, we're still struggling in this education system, and we really need to get the educators to listen to us somehow. And yes, we need more research, but honestly and truthfully, I've now learned from my experience, it's the emotion that gets people to listen. And you are the queen of that ability. So yes, please. Yes, please.
Some things get me fired up. And this one might, I could get angry about it in a bit of a way and shake people's heads. Because just like you said in your talk, that really meant the world to me is that just because I learn differently, just because I see the world in a different way, doesn't mean there's something wrong with me.
Exactly.
And I think that itself, by itself, is such a huge message. Whether we're talking about dyslexia or we're talking about any other struggle that someone has where they approach something in a different way than the mainstream.
Exactly. It's like in the old days, left-handers used to have their hands tied behind their back, right? It was not okay to write left-handed.
I was a left-hander and my mom put my left hand behind my back and made me be a right-hander.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, her father did it to her. And now I'm just exploring being the left-handed person. And so just as of late, I'm starting to purposefully in yoga cross my legs the way a left-hander would. I grab my hands the way a left-hander, just to see if that feels good to me, just to see what difference that would have made. Because I often think maybe it was all supposed to come from this way and now you made it this way. And what did that do to my learning? So, I mean, that's a question I still would like to pose. When you do that, do you cause that problem with the learning? Is that got something to do with it? I'm throwing that out in the air lately, just as a wonder, you know, because I know we don't have the answer, but.
The only thing I can relate it to is that our right brain controls the left side of our body and our left brain controls the right side of our body. And the right brain is the more creative side. So you tend to have people who are left-handed who are a little bit more artistic, a little bit more creative, a little bit more in that realm. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so if you have that very creative mind, there's a very good chance that you can also alter your perception. So that's where you land up in my world.
Yeah, I don't know, but it is something I'm thinking about and I'm trying to exercise the left-handed side of me and see what
a lot of my kids can do brilliant mirror writing. They can write a whole postcard. I remember one of my parents said that her child was in the car. They were going on holiday writing a postcard. And she looked at the postcard and every single word was mirror writing. And the girl said, yeah, but look. And she held it up to the mirror. She said, there you are. So she knew. And another one of my adults is able to write their name with their right hand in the normal direction. And at the same time, mirror write their name with their left hand in the other direction. And I can do that. I've tried it. It's really fun.
Oh, well, you know, to be honest with you, we only need to buy one paper because I can read it upside down and backwards as fast as the person sitting across the table. I can look at it and read it like that. I did have a client who was 10 years old and he was brilliant. And he was homeschooled. And the year he fell in love with Leonardo da Vinci, he decided to write everything in mirror writing. So his mom had to check his homework in the bathroom. Sang opera while he was doing it. He has to be the most incredible. And he was a miniaturist. So he made miniature art. And I got to go into his room, which looked like the inside of his brain, his room. Chaotic, but the art was just beyond belief. Definitely, he's got to be one of the most interesting clients I ever worked with.
I can imagine. The same adult who can do the writing with both hands at the same time in opposite directions. She said about Leonardo da Vinci, his notebooks, it's usually the writing is on the left-hand side and the drawings are on the right hand. And she said he was supposed to be writing back to front and mirrored because he didn't want people to steal his ideas, if you like. But she reckons he was doing it at the same time. She reckons he was drawing with his right hand and writing this backward stuff with his left hand at the same time. Can't ask him yet. So Tanya, we should probably bring this to a close, although I would love to go on. Is there some message that you would like to leave everybody with?
Yes, and that is every person has something to share. Every person has a gift to give to the world. that only they are able to tell because of their perception and their life experience, and that it's important. And even if just one other person in the world hears it and it makes a difference in their life, then it's worth the work that it takes and the courage to get up and speak your truth right from your core. And that I believe with every fiber of my being.
And that's what makes you who you are. Thank you, Tanya, so much. And if you'd like to get hold of Tanya, you can find her at www.tanyaehman.com. And that's Tanya, T-A-N-I-A, and Ehman is E-H-M-A-N.com. And she will empower your voice one word at a time. It says so on the website. Thank you so much, honestly. We all owe you so much. We're very grateful.
I'm honored. Thank you.
Thank you to everyone who's listening. Please subscribe, follow, share. And if you'd like to see what the whole Dyslexic Society is up to, go to www.thewds.org. And we'd love to hear from you at info@thewds.org. I hope you'll join us to hear some more speakers and more of the TEDx Bear Creek Park organizing and coaching team. So till next time, take care, stay well, and bye for now.